You're listening to WBH Radio. My name is William Holly. Happy to be back with you guys for another episode. Got my man Fenton in the building. Fent, what's good?
What's going on? What's going on? Shout out to WBH Radio, 12 ounce. And we out here on a lovely spring day in Brooklyn College campus. That's a tongue twister. I'll tell you, anybody on the internet, say that three times fast.
Yes, we are back at it, man. So, Toronto, y'all really going to get swept like that? After having a franchise best 59 wins, after securing the number one seed, after ensuring home court advantage for the playoffs.
Regular season doesn't matter.
Y'all really going to let LeBron just snatch four straight games from y'all? I'm like, yo, Fan, I'm at a loss for words, man. I've never seen a team who a lot of people thought, yo, they could possibly win this series. This is the year they finally topple LeBron. And you not only lose, but you get swept.
No boys allowed, man. This is the NBA.
Yo, that's got to be demoralizing from top to bottom, son. Yo, I believe that there are really no losses in life. Like, you gain valuable lessons. You learn new things. We've seen teams lose games, and they could go into the offseason and say, you know what? We just one piece away. We need a shooter, or we need a big man. But Toronto was supposed to have filled those gaps over the previous three seasons when they've lost to the Cavaliers. Like, okay, we need another piece. They went and improved the bench. We need something else. They got Serge Ibaka in the starting lineup. Where do you go from here? That is the most frustrating part. If I'm in that organization, it's like, yo, we did all of the tricks. There's nothing left for us to do. Man, that's just crazy.
That's the same thing happened to guys like Sean Kemp and Gary Payton, John Stockton and Karl Malone, Patrick Ewing and John Starks at the Knicks. They all ran into the buzzsaw, which was the great Michael Jeffrey Jordan. I can't say that the Raptors learned anything from this run because we learned something more about them. The Raptors are not mentally tough enough. LeBron owns them. DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry, the backcourt of the Raptors, those are LeBron's two sons.
Yo, that's funny because I was thinking of the movie Friday. There was a scene where the character Smokey, played by Chris Tucker, he said, I got mind control over Debo. Debo be like, shut the hell up. I'll be quiet. But when he leave, I'll be talking again. And yo, that remind me of DeMar DeRozan. He could rip through the rest of the league. But when LeBron's in town, he's quiet.
Daddy's home.
And yo, Finn, we saw that in game three when they benched him in the fourth quarter.
He got benched in the fourth quarter of game four as well. And he was trying to get put out of that game.
No, he got tossed in game four.
He did?
Yeah,
apologies. I fell asleep before that happened.
He got tossed because of flagrant foul in the third quarter. But I want to go back to game three. He got benched in the fourth quarter. And after the game, again, you know my pet peeve with these guys where they lack accountability. The media asked him, hey, why did he bench you? And he came with the response, oh, you got to ask coach. Yo, DeMar, you don't know why you got benched?
Lowry was balling, though.
You don't know why you got benched. You scored 8 points to that point on 25% shooting. You were not giving your coach anything. You step up to the media and say, yo, I understand why coach benched me because I wasn't performing. And you know what? Coach was rewarded for his decision because the Raptors were able to cut the lead down the half. They had a chance to win that game late. They outscored the Cavaliers by 12 points in that fourth quarter with DeMar DeRozan on the bench.
But did you honestly believe the Raptors were going to come back and even win a game just for respect, like saying that you're not going to come and disrespect me like that in my house, sweep me like that? A 60-win team that gets swept? Come on, we never seen that before. So it's hard to believe that it's the Raptors that didn't show up. What I saw is LeBron showing up. LeBron had the quote-unquote worst game of his season, game one, and he still destroyed the Raptors. I mean, he squeaked that win out, but I didn't believe the Raptors was going to come back and win the game. They were winning the game the entire time. I didn't believe they were going to win that game one. I can't say the Raptors underperformed rather than LeBron went above and beyond his own natural level. Like, he turned Super Saiyan this series.
Yo, Fenn, of course I thought the Raptors were going to put up a fight this year.
They're the Raptors.
You saw early on in game one, they controlled that whole game of 15 points, damn near the whole game. Of course I thought they were going to win.
Then you have higher expectation in the Raptors than I do. I had no faith. I gave them no shot in that series.
Yo, this is the weakest version of the Cavaliers we've seen in a while.
Everybody keeps saying that, but maybe LeBron's team may be the weakest that he's had in a long time, and I still don't believe that. But this LeBron that we are seeing right now is the best LeBron we've ever seen. Even in the championship runs down in Miami, this LeBron that we're seeing right now is the best LeBron we've ever seen. I've never seen LeBron ask for the ball in the post, demand the ball in the post every single play, work the offense through the post.
Yo, that's an exaggeration, man. He's not in the post every play. Stop that, because I wish he would. And when he is in the post, he's unstoppable. Stop that. Listen.
When I was watching, that's what I saw.
They stumbled into the playoffs, right? They made a big trade at the trade deadline. That's February. Trying to put those pieces together. Rodney Hood, Jordan Clarkson.
Blew up the whole team for that.
Trying to put it together. They had a tough first round against Victor Oladipo and Indiana Pacers.
Shout out to Indiana.
Fenton, if you can't get a game this year, it's dark days. In Toronto.
I don't know. You ever been to Toronto in the summer? It's nice up there, boy.
Yo, I don't know where they... That is the most frustrating part about... That's the scariest part. Is that if you Masai Ujiri, the general manager for the Toronto Raptors, if you the owner of the Toronto Raptors, you sitting in your office right now puzzled.
What do you do? What do you do next? What do you do next season? What's your move?
There is no move. You call DeMar DeRozan in your office and say, yo, what's up? You really want to get better? And again, Fenn, this would bother me about a lot of their comments, specifically after Game 3 when DeMar DeRozan, you asked him, yo, why did Coach bench you? And he can't give you – he said, go ask Coach, as if the coach made the wrong move. That lack of accountability, I truly believe, prevents players from being truly great.
But what do you think he was going to say when he sits up at the podium?
Great question. Fenton, Michael Jordan wouldn't respond that way. Yo, you step up to the podium after not playing well. Yo, man, I understand Coach had to go in a different direction. I got to do a better job of performing for him and my teammates. I'm not going to just absolve myself and say, reporter, go ask the coach why he benched me. It's clear as day why he benched you. You're not performing. You're getting outplayed. You're shooting 25%. You're turning over the ball. And, yo, Fent, when all else fails, if you can't score that rock,
you got to come out.
No. If you can't score that rock, at least give me some loose balls. At least defend. Game 3, that last play where LeBron hit that running one-legged bank shot, he had the rookie, poor OG Anunoby, on him. OG Anunoby looked like he was moving in slow motion, just trying to hang with LeBron. Look at that clip.
But that was his assignment the entire series. They drafted that kid to defend LeBron. So you can't knock him for not being able to stop LeBron. I don't think we've seen anybody stop LeBron.
No. I'm not faulting OG Anunoby. My criticism is on DeMar DeRozan for not being somebody his team could rely on in any facet of the game. I don't care about your scoring. I don't care about whatever. You still need to be able to contribute. And in that last play, your coach should be able to look at you and say, yo, help me get a stop. But you gave him nothing. And going back to my point of that lack of accountability, Fenton, if you don't truly believe you have a problem, if you don't truly believe you have a deficiency, how can you work diligently to improve it?
You can't, because you can't see your deficit. But at the same time, you got to praise LeBron for what he did, man. You can't put it all on the Raptors. DeRozan didn't show up. He did not at all. Lowry was trying, but, you know, it's ineffective when he's not making jump shots. You know what I mean? He's under 6 feet tall. He's kind of stocky. He's not that quick. He's trying to get to the lane. He can't do much. He's going to try. He was trying. He was working.
Who's that?
Lowry. He was giving effort. Rosen, you could tell he was defeated, but what can you do when Daddy comes to the Raptor Stadium? What can you do when Daddy come home? Nothing, man. Like,
Yo, I guess you just sit back and call him daddy, man.
And like, that's what he did. But you gotta acknowledge the greatness of LeBron James. He put his team on his back this playoff series and the series before that, and he's dragging everybody to the finals. He's dragging everybody to the finals. It's not about the Raptors. If you believed in the Raptors, that's your mistake.
Fan, the Eastern
60-win Atlanta team, when they was the number one seed, what do you thought they was going to do? Get them out of here. The only team that I saw that won 60 games that took a bad L in the playoffs was my Dirk Dallas team. When they were the number one seed, they should have won the championship that year, and they lost to the Baron David-led Golden State Warriors. I think that was 2009 or something like that.
Yo, matter of fact, I don't even have a problem with that year because the Mavericks lost the regular season to that team 3-1. Styles make fight, and Baron Davis and Steven Jackson, they were a tough matchup for them all year, so that's not them choking. But LeBron James, he's great. I enjoy watching him. I'm having a great time. But he is benefiting from a weak East.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when you talk about LeBron being called daddy, I don't know if you saw the post-game press conference of the Toronto Raptors head coach, Dwayne Casey. He damn near called LeBron dad. He made reference to basically, like, we just going to wait it out until LeBron is gone.
What can you do? He gave you the honest answer that wanted DeMar DeRozan to give you.
Yo,
don't be mad at him for being honest. He said, like, yo, daddy's home. What do you want him to do?
Yo, I just heard that today. I was floored when I saw that. He made reference to, I don't have the exact quote, but he was like, you know what? We seen Michael and Kobe and them topple. Like, eventually the run's going to come to the end. That's not what I want to hear. I want to see you aim at the crown.
What can he do? Like, from his position at that moment, what can he do?
Yo, you remember what Victor Oladipo did right after he lost the series to the Cleveland Cavaliers? Tell me.
He went in the gym.
Stop. That's what I want to see from DeMar DeRozan, not being dejected at the press conference. I want to see this series right here, after being number one seed, after 59 wins, after career years from DeMar and Kyle Lowry, this is the type of series and loss that make you reevaluate your whole life. Like, damn, maybe I should have played baseball, right? No, this is your come to Jesus moment. Like, yo, whatever I've been doing, I got to revamp the whole thing.
But
you call a wife and kids, say, baby, cancel the vacation this summer. Cancel. I don't want to feel this again, this embarrassment. They couldn't even lift their head up at the press conference.
But that's what they did. They changed their whole style of play. They changed everything about the Toronto Raptors that we've known from the past. And they made the right improvements to be that number one seed 59-win team. But when you run into the buzzsaw LeBron James, what are you going to do?
I don't know if they made changes. I think the East was a little bit softer, and they capitalized because they had the most continuity. Again, Philly was putting their pieces together. Kyrie just got to Boston. LeBron James had two different teams this year, and I think the Raptors, a team with the most, continuity, time together, cohesion, they just capitalized off that. So I don't want to give them credit for revamping, but I want to finish up on the Raptors. Yo, fan, it's time to dig deep and look in the mirror. That's it. And it might be too late. Yo, might have to drop a bomb in Toronto.
I can't see it, but there's nothing you could do up there.
You got Drake talking crap to Kendrick Perkins. Like, yo, it's chaos. And also, Masai Ujiri, the Toronto Raptors general manager, he got fined during game 3 for stepping on the court during halftime and questioning an official. That shows me just nobody's prepared for
like
the big
one. Like you said, chaos up there,
yo,
man.
That's your whole unit is out of whack. Your general manager should not be on the court handling, interacting with referees.
There's nothing you can do with that spot, man. Just take that L and go home. Just like Philly's about to do right now against Boston, man. I don't know why they're dragging this out. They could have just took the nice sweep, go home early. Like you said, go back in the gym, have Ben Simmons work on his jump shot, you know. Make Embiid take the mask off, go relax, go back to Cameroon for the summer. You know, you're gonna why are you fighting? You're not coming back from this 3-1, you know, series. It's over.
Yo, the Eastern Conference was supposed to be the one that was tightly contested. You know, the blowouts were supposed to take place in the West. But I am severely shocked that the Philadelphia 76ers are losing to a ragtag bunch of misfits. You know, these guys are not the stars. This is not Kyrie Irving. This is not Gordon Hayward. The best player on that court is still Joel Embiid. And number two should be Ben Simmons.
It's that guy's.
So why are you losing
to a well-coached, better defensive, more organized, more prepared team? I don't know, Will. Why would you lose against a basketball team like that?
No, point taken. The Boston Celtics are extremely prepared.
Then you can't beat preparation. No matter how much talent you have, no matter how much will you try to enforce on the game, you're not going to beat a team that is more prepared, that is more willing to do what it takes to win. And that's what I'm seeing from Philly. They're not prepared to do what it takes to win. Ben Simmons.
All right, listen. Boston Celtics, great. Brad Stevens, great. All these guys, great. Fenn, I want you to answer this for me. How do you explain Ben Simmons, game two, 1 point?
The NBA, if you can't shoot a jump shot in the NBA, you're going to have games like that where you're going to have 1 point. If you deny him access to the rim for easy layups, dunks, fast break opportunities, he's going to disappear in the offense because you can't
Stop right there. Yo, when in doubt, superstars should be able to get to the rim and get a layup. Especially in today's NBA Fenton, when all of the big guys are around the three-point arc. The lane is open. I've seen a few instances in this series that made me wonder, damn, is this moment too big for Ben Simmons?
Like I said, when the better defensive team is putting the pressure on you, you're not getting your opportunities, which you were normally with. When he was playing Miami, Miami was 5 feet off of him. He came with a head full of steam to the rim. You can't stop a guy 6'10 that can handle the ball coming to the rim with a head full of steam. If you're on that man, his handle is not great. He's just bigger, a little bit faster, and stronger than most people that defend him. So Boston have all these 6'7", 6'8", lengthy wing guys that's going to defend Ben Simmons and deny him his best moments on the court. He's not going to get those easy driving lanes. If you see the defense, they're playing great team defense. Everybody's switching. Everybody's moving. There's hands on the ball. There's a lot of steals. There's a lot of strips. There's not easy access to the paint. Ben Simmons' lack of a jump shot is his kryptonite.
Damn, fam, you giving all of these dudes passes today.
I never proclaimed Ben Simmons to be any good to give him a pass. He's not an NBA player yet to me. He has an NBA body, but he's not an NBA player.
I want to go back to, it was game three. Game three, there was 19 seconds left. And there was a play that made me say, oh, wow, Ben Simmons might be in over his head. The 76ers were up one. Joel Embiid took a shot, missed. Ben Simmons grabs the rebound, and he flicks a shot back at the rim, and it misses. Fenn, all he had to do was grab that ball
and reset.
Now, again, I don't care about your scoring. Ben Simmons, you are the floor general. You're supposed to understand game situation. LeBron does, Magic Johnson does, Oscar Robertson does. So if all else fails, if you're not having a great game to that point, you are still my floor leader. You still have to have your head in the game. So for you to flick a pass at the rim, I mean a shot at the rim, when you had the ability to just secure it and win the game, that tells me, yo, that asshole got tight and you a little bit nervous. And you cannot tell me that his free throw shooting woes didn't play a factor in that. You cannot tell me.
That's what I was going to say, Will. He put that shot up quick so he can't get fouled. He don't want to see that free throw line. He doesn't want to see the court. He looks lost out there, honestly. When the game is not going his way, he looks lost. And they're trying to dump it into Embiid. Look, they had the backup point guard running the show.
So you can't tell me about how great the Boston Celtics is when he had the opportunity to secure a game for his team and he squandered it. That, yo, Fenn, my eyes might have popped out of my head. Like, that's basketball 101. You secure that rock, you get fouled. Or if you're scared, you find J.J. Redick. And again, post-game, you know what he said, Fenn? He said, yo, it was natural instinct. No, your ass was naturally nervous. Your coach said the same thing. Yo, if we had to do that again, yeah, you secure the ball and you bring it out.
his instinct was, I guess, to put it back up. He was nervous, like you said, at the time, not thinking, not being prepared. Fight or flight.
Yeah.
Flight came in. He wasn't ready to fight. So he took off running with that quick shot. Like I said, he didn't want no parts of the free throw line. He didn't want that embarrassment.
That's crazy. So we need to calm down on the LeBron comparisons right now. That was just truly alarming. That's a NBA playoff game that you squandered. And not to mention that he threw the turnover late in overtime on the inbound pass that Al Horford was able to steal and get down the lane for a layup.
But you see, with passes like that, both players are to fault. Embiid for position and Simmons for the bad pass. But you got to give credit for Al Horford for anticipation and defense.
Oh, my God.
It's everybody's – it's just 10 people on the court, Will. They're not scrimmaging against the practice squad. So you think Al Horford just going to allow Embiid to catch the ball and position himself? No, it's defense against offense. And the better defensive play won out against the bonehead offensive play. You can't do anything about that. Like I said, Boston has more will and willing to do more to win these games than Philly.
Fenton, we've seen Al Horford in the league for 10 years plus. He's never made that play. Stop it. Ben Simmons is a superior player, or at least he should be to Al Horford. Joel Embiid should be a superior player to Al Horford.
You said the second part right. Joel Embiid should be a superior player to Al Horford. Ben Simmons, I don't even think he's probably like the seventh best player on the floor in that series.
Yo, stop it, man. But again, that play, I don't care. They won a game last night. Bravo. You didn't get clapped.
It's coming.
You didn't get swept.
It's coming.
But, man, Ben Simmons, it, to see you squander a playoff game with bad decisions, again, if you go up, we know you can't shoot right now. So if you miss shots, great. But what we praise you for is your court awareness, your ability to lead a team, and you're failing your team in that perspective. And the only reason I can come up with it, you seem to be nervous.
He looks nervous. You don't have to think it. You can see it in his face. I've seen a man scared before. He can see it in his face.
But he comes back to you in a post game with the, yo, oh, it was instant, natural instinct. I make like that play said, every you, day in practice.
You got mad at the Toronto Raptors head coach, Dwayne Casey, for being honest. These guys, they're not gonna be like, yo, man, the moment was too big for me. I didn't want to go to the free throw line, so I chucked it up real quick, hoping I could get a quick one. He's not going to say that. You know that. I know that. Come on, in a moment, like an honest moment, if you catch him on the street, like he gonna be like, yo, what you wanted me to do? The rim was right there. If I took it out, they found me, I gotta go to the line. Well, I try to get a quick point. That would have been up three. Better opportunity for us to win. I mean, both sides of the argument is right.
I got you.
But you said there's not seven better players than Ben Simmons on the floor. I could give you seven players right now better than Ben Simmons in that series. On his team and on Boston. You said he's
seven players
better
if you were to take a draft.
Those two teams. Ben Simmons, I may not put him in my top 10.
Stop it, man. But listen, hold on. Something else I wanted to ask you. TJ, what's the kid, McCollum, that came off the bench for the 76ers, scored 19 points?
Yeah. I don't even know his first name.
TJ or something. Those should be Ben Simmons scoring opportunities.
The difference between TJ and Ben Simmons.
He can't shoot.
There you go.
He can't shoot. Man, the East. But we should be in for a great matchup with the Cleveland Cavaliers versus the Boston Celtics. But, Finn, I want to ask you what's going on out West, man. I don't stay up that late.
Man, listen. Houston's doing what we thought they should have been doing. But I like how Donovan Mitchell and the Utah Jazz came out and got that win in game two.
No. Yo. I know the Rookie of the Year voting is over prior to the playoffs. Well, Ben Simmons should thank God, because if the playoffs was included, he wouldn't have a shot.
Ben Simmons should thank ESPN and the rest of the media for praising him as the Rookie of the Year. It's the same thing. Like, this frustrates me. The same thing would happen with LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony's rookie year. Who was the Rookie of the Year that year?
Hold on. Yo,
his team on their back and went to the playoffs that year. Led their team in most statistical categories and went to the playoffs. They got knocked out in the first round while the other guy was home watching, getting his MVP Rookie of the Year award. Come on, man.
Yo, DA, are you listening? Yo, Fred, that's DA's argument all the time, that LeBron and Melo Rookie of the Year conversation is a big point of emphasis for him. But I wanted to go back to the Houston and Utah Jazz series. Game two Donovan Mitchell and the Utah Jazz were able to pull it out.
Balling.
Nobody saw that coming. Of course, they're going to lose the series, but that organization is trending upward, unlike the Raptors. You see, that's the difference. But with that victory, yo, Finn, I pride myself on being self-aware. I pride myself on being versatile. And, yo, that's what we saw from Donovan Mitchell. The first game, he came out, he was on his scoring tier or his usual role, and it didn't work. Ricky Rubio's injured. So the second game, he said, you know what? I can't just play my regular role. My team needs me to handle the ball a little bit more. Again, that's self-awareness. Again, that's versatility. And he protected the rock. He played more of a playmaker position. He still picked his spots and scored. He came on late with the scoring. And, man, that awareness from a young guy is truly impressive. They talking about, will LeBron going to be next year, Philadelphia, L.A.? He might want to look at Utah. God damn.
You can't take Joe Ingles' spot. Lefty out there stroking it, man. But Donovan Mitchell switched his game up and did something better.
Switched his game.
But you have to put the whole team on notice, the team of the Houston Rockets. They look like they just came from the club, or they probably, I don't know what they were doing out in Houston that night. But they were sleeping. They look very lazy. Yo, No. You have to see both sides. Yeah. Houston should have came out and smoked them at home. Utah came out. They were hungry. They took an L. They didn't like how that felt, and they came out a little hungrier. They were more aggressive. They did what they made the winning plays. The Rockets were sleeping.
Listen.
Look at game three. Punched it right in the mouth. Sent them home. Like, don't even come back out of the locker room at halftime. They were up like 40 points at halftime.
Every time the Rockets lose, people say, oh, they look tired or they look uninterested. That's giving them a pass. Can they just be a flawed team that has peaks and valleys? Oh, they didn't want it today. That's not true. They wanted it. They're just not a great team. They're an imperfect team. They're an inconsistent team. So stop saying, oh, they just didn't want it today. That's giving them a pass as if they got a light switch. No. When they hit those video game shots, 3 feet beyond a three-point line, they cool. When they don't, they don't have another move to go to. They're not like the Golden State Warriors who, if they're not hitting, they can ratchet up the defense. No, stop giving the Rockets a pass, man. I really hate when people say that joint.
I mean, I'm looking at the games. Yeah, when they're missing, they were missing the threes, but that's a count to the Utah Jazz's defense. They were more aggressive on defense. Like, those steals, those energy plays, that momentum shift put you to sleep. Yeah, all right, you know what? We're going to just come back out and do what we got to do. No, and then Utah kept the energy up, and the Rockets couldn't keep up, and they lost. But look what happened in game three. They put their foot on Utah's neck, and there was no easing up. I mean, you gotta look at it. Call a spade a spade. Shout out to Donovan Mitchell, man. The young boy balling.
Nah, that was definitely impressive. Yo, I didn't even watch that series until I see him pull off that victory. Like, oh, snap. He about to turn it up.
And you know what's crazy? The Knicks should have had him.
Yo, don't even get me started. We're going to talk about the Knicks a little bit. But, yo, I feel like this show is moving too damn fast, man. Slow down. You listening to WBH Radio. My name is William Holly. Got my man Fent in the building.
Yo, contract is signed.
Recording at the beautiful campus of Brooklyn College. Shout out to my people at the radio station at my WBCR. Few NBA moves in the coaching ranks. The Detroit Pistons parted ways with Stan Van Gundy.
What are you going to do there? It's Detroit. Like, they expected them to even make the playoffs? I did it.
In this weak-ass East? Absolutely. But again, I'm not even talking about what took place this season. I don't understand why he warranted getting the money he got, getting the responsibility he got, being the president and the coach. What on his resume said he warrants that? Shaquille O'Neal calls him the master of panic. And that's exactly who he is. That is not leadership. I've told you guys, I was in the U.S. Army when things was life and death. None of my leadership responded that way. With Stan Van Gundy, you can't tell if freaking it's just a regular turnover or they just got blown out by 20. His face is always the same.
He takes everything serious.
It's a joke, man. And again, yo, Fent, I'm not joking. I'm not being silly. I'm not being facetious. When I go on a job interview, they judge me based on how I'm dressed, right? Stan Van Gundy dresses like a slob. How can you walk into a room of NBA players who are the flyest of the fly, when we talking alpha males, and how can you command their respect when you look disheveled, when your jacket is not tailored? You making the money? I truly believe that plays a role in not being able to get the job done. Every stop, Miami Heat, Shaq got his ass out of there. Said, yo, Pat Riley, come back downstairs. And they won a championship that year. The Orlando Magic.
They went to the finals, bro. With the right formula to play with a Dwight Howard in his prime. Shooters and Dwight. That's how Shaq won in Miami. Shooters and Shaq.
I don't want to stay too much on Stan Van Gundy, but I'm going to tell you this, though. Fenton and myself, big fans of Dan Le Batard. He will probably be back on the show as a weekly contributor. So that's one plus. He was pretty good on the radio. But as a head coach, yo, somebody get him a Taylor.
Speaking of Taylor, man, my man Superfly Fizdale's coaching the New York Knicks, man. Do we have a coach, Will?
Yo, on PTI, they play a game, What's the Word? So what's your word for David Fizdale being a New York, the New York Knicks coach?
That was my first thought when I was like, you gonna see. Honestly, there's nobody that's tailor-made for that Knicks job. It's a lot of pressure, a lot of media scrutiny, a lot of pressure by the city. The owner, forget about it. The owner. Oh, my God. I'm afraid to know what he's going to do with a personality like David Fizdale. I mean, we're going to see what happens. And since the Knicks were in such disarray, they destroyed all their opportunities to be better in the future Hold by on. Phil Jackson.
Listen, what's your problem with the owner?
A problem with the owner?
Yeah.
The owner's a madman. It's documented. He's a crazy person. Phil Jackson said he didn't want the job. Please don't give me the job. I'm going to give you more money. You know what? I'll take the job. And then he allowed him to destroy the team. Anybody with common sense could see the moves that he were making were not beneficial to your organization.
The New York Knicks owner is a man by the name of James Dolan. I used to work for Madison Square Garden. I worked with the hockey team. It is owned by James Dolan as well.
I heard he's a good hockey guy.
Jim Dolan is not a good person. You know, I've heard about him berating people who are on a lower tier than him in the organization.
Everybody's a lower tier than him.
I've never seen anything. I've seen stuff that made me believe, like, okay, I understand why there's so many negative things about him. Just little weird stuff. He seems to be like he's inherited everything that he's ever gotten. So he's like a little petulant child who doesn't know what it takes to really be successful. He has a band called JD and the Straight Shots, and he pays people to perform. So if somebody's going on the road, he say, I'll pay you to let me be in your opening act. You know, so he kind of buys his friends.
Money talks.
To put a little bow on it, he was great friends with Harvey Weinstein. Jim Dolan, he comes to the Knicks and the Rangers game and he sits with a row full of models that's paid for. I mean, it is a circus. But,
oh man,
I got no problem with him, and I get mad when New Yorkers are like, they berate him. If you remember, a few years ago, New York Knicks fans were getting ready to protest at Madison Square Garden. New York Knicks fans were fed up. Yo, I'm tired of the Knicks sucking. Jim Dolan, do something. Jim Dolan responded by saying, okay, I'm going to hire Phil Jackson. I'm going to hire 11-time champion Phil Jackson. New York City fans said, oh, sounds good to me. A move that was universally applauded.
For like 2 minutes.
The fans said, yo, Jim Dolan, you better not mess with Phil Jackson. Give him the tools he needs to be successful. Jim Dolan said, all right, what you want to do? Phil Jackson said, I want to hire Steve Kerr. All right, go for it. Steve Kerr turned it down. Phil Jackson said, okay, I want to hire Derek Fisher. Jim Dolan said, okay. Yo, Jim Dolan did what y'all wanted him to do. probably the worst thing on Phil's resume is that he lets Jim Dolan off the hook. Jim Dolan, he listened to you guys. He listened to you guys and said, yo, y'all want Phil Jackson? And then when y'all started calling for Phil Jackson to be fired, he fired him. So even though Jim Dolan has this history of being scumbag, yo, to me, he's off the hook. The Knicks' problem is they haven't done anything in the draft since freaking 1985. Since Patrick Ewing. We could have had a Donovan Mitchell, a Dennis Smith Jr.
Could have had Steph.
But we got a Frank Ntilikina.
Frank the Bub. Yo, get him out of here.
So, again, to go back to the hire, it's irrelevant. Who knows? It's like Fenn said, let's see what this GM is going to do. That's really what's going to separate us from the pack. It ain't no damn coach. Shoot, Jeff Hornacek was cool. And he was handcuffed his first couple years because he had to run Phil Jackson's freaking triangle.
If they didn't have the triangle holding them back, I think the Knicks would have did good because they were playing well. Besides injuries, the Knicks would have did okay. So, I mean, what you going to do? Hope Fizdale does good, man. I want to see my New York team do their thing. But how you just gloss over the fact that the Golden State Warriors is about to go back to the NBA Finals because they're going to steamroll New Orleans and they're going to steamroll Houston. Everybody thinks Houston got a shot. It's not happening. So we're going to see Golden State eventually take on LeBron and the Cavs.
Nah, don't fast forward to just that. Yeah, the Rockets should be interesting. It should be like 150 to 151. They're going to score a lot of points. But the media's been making a big deal about this Hampton 5 lineup. You familiar with the Golden State Warriors Hampton 5?
What's that? Run it down to me.
So
I'm a little distracted right now.
So if you remember, they went to the Hamptons to recruit KD.
Mm.
So the four people that went to recruit KD plus KD, of course. So that's Steph, Klay, Draymond.
And Iggy. So a lot of his problems, man. But that was their problem lineup, too, when they won the chip. It was Steph, Klay, Draymond, Iguodala, and Matt Barnes. That was their lineup. That was their running down teams. Nobody can stop that lineup. Iggy is key. Let's go.
So, yo, that's interesting, man. We'll see how that plays out. But don't fast forward just yet. The Rockets, who knows? Styles make fight. Both fast-paced teams.
See, the Rockets' problem is you want to run that fight. You want to have that matchup. They cannot. They don't have the guns. Like, they're in that fight with a 9mm. Golden State is playing with an AK-47.
They got the league MVP in James Harden. They got a future Hall of Famer in Chris Paul.
Chris Paul never made it to the conference finals, future Hall of Famer, because why? He dropped 30 dimes a night? Get him out of here, man.
Because Jordan Brand told me, brainwashed me to believe that. But hold on, before we move on from basketball, did you hear about Rodney Hood?
Oh, that is terrible. Like, as a man, like, what do you do with that?
Tell me what happened. What happened?
He didn't want to come into the game.
So
that's a sucker move.
Hold on.
What?
Cleveland Cavaliers guard Rodney Hood. And the 30-point blowout in game four, coach said, yo, Rodney. Rodney said, nah, man, I'm good. You can let the other guys play.
Get him out of here, man. That's offensive. First of all, you haven't showed up at all in the playoffs. You're going to play in the bum time minutes. That's your time. Honestly, they were a nice bit of sprinkling seasoning that the Cavs needed in the second half of the season to get into the playoffs. But as of the playoffs, that whole newfound Cavs second unit of Rodney Hood,
Jordan Clarkson,
dude from the Lakers, the big man from the Lakers.
Larry Nance Jr.,
they have been MIA. And it looks like the second half team gave the first half team an opportunity to rest. And now the first half team is balling. Kyle Korver balling. Kevin Love balling.
You crushing Rodney Hood. You can't have compassion for a man who was the big man on campus at Duke, started in Utah, came to Cleveland, averaged 10 points, started the first game of the NBA playoffs for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and now he is not getting minutes until the end of the game when the team is up 30.
But he hasn't showed up in the minutes that he's gotten. You started in the first game of the playoff series. Where has he been since? The man scored 8 points this whole playoffs. 8 points.
Fenta, I don't deny that he shouldn't be that the coach didn't make the right move by benching him or so. I'm just asking, do you have a little compassion for the mental space he might be in, the embarrassment that he's facing?
Well, the same mental space and embarrassment that DeMar DeRozan is facing by getting spanked on national TV 4 days in a row? And what you expected to come up on the podium and say, yo, talk to coach. Coach benched me. I didn't bench myself. No, he's going to say, yo, man, I wasn't playing good. Coach did the right thing. I bet you. No. No, you go in that game and take that bump time minutes and then show out in those bump time minutes and maybe you might play in the Eastern Conference Finals. What is he doing? He's not doing anything for himself by not getting in the game. You make yourself look worse. Now you trade bait.
Yeah, they've been discussing that. But he did come out. He apologized to the team. He apologized to the general manager. I feel for him, though, man. That precipitous fall. But he got to understand. He got to understand that was an opportunity to get a rhythm going, man. Go in the game, see a couple shots drop, and roll that into the next couple of series, the next couple of games. So I think he missed an opportunity there, and he knows it. Playing next to LeBron.
It's tough, man.
It's tough, man. But the spotlight is here. Even bench players. Richard Jefferson's on TV now. Like, Rodney Hood, please take advantage of that. He know he messed up. And I don't think there should be any suspension. Or anything like that. Like
a team suspension, yes. You disobey the coach. The coach tells you to come into the game. That's warranted a team suspension. NBA probably not, but a team suspension? They shouldn't even bring him to the game one of the Eastern Conference Finals.
Nah, man, because I think all players understand that perspective.
They do. So if they understand that perspective, why didn't Rodney Hood step up and accept his role? If they should understand, okay, maybe it's not what I wanted to do. Maybe I don't want to play the bum time minutes, but I got to do what I got to do.
Rodney Hood is coming from Utah. They understand that this spotlight is a little bit different. Tristan Thompson got benched, but Tristan Thompson's been with LeBron for years. He's under the Kardashian spotlight. He knows, yo, he
and
knows
what when they needed him. Something in he's Indiana, put his cape on.
So, again, this will be a lesson for Rodney Hood. If anything, yo, you got to buy the team drinks tonight. But that's it, man. No serious punishment. You listening to WBH Radio. Got my man Fent in the building.
Yep.
Feel like we moving at breakneck speed, man. We got to slow down a little bit.
What today is? Today is Tuesday, May 8th. It's 8:30. Let me check the score real quick. Let me see what my Yankees is doing up in the Bronx. Them junkies.
But yo, fam, let me ask you. There are a couple of moving parts going on in the NFL broadcast booths right now. Jason Witten, former Dallas Cowboy, just signed on to be the Monday Night Football color commentator. How much do the broadcasters play a role in your viewing pleasure?
None at all. I could watch the game on mute. I often do most times when I watch the game. First of all, I don't watch regular football anymore. I've experienced this drug called the NFL Red Zone. It's nothing like you've ever seen before in your life. And once you've had that, there's no coming back, baby. I'm chasing that every Sunday.
But, yo, they about to pay him $4 million to be in the booth. The Dallas Cowboys were going to give him $1 million to play football and get his head banged around.
That's crazy. But, I mean, what would you do? You're going to sit up and watch the game or you're going to go get your head banged around, like
that's
you
it.
Said?
That's a good move. And it also highlights how playing for prestigious organizations will give you a boost. Troy Aikman's in the booth, Dallas Cowboys. Tony Romo's in the booth, Dallas Cowboy.
You can't compare Troy Aikman to Tony Romo. Troy Aikman is a Super Bowl winning champion.
No, I'm talking about playing under the Dallas star. The world knows. We know who the Dallas players are.
I understand that.
There are players who might have been better than them that play for teams that are not so popular. So that's what I'm saying. The Dallas star has its perks.
It absolutely does.
Deion's on TV. Michael Irvin's on TV. Emmitt's on TV.
Champions, man. These guys, when you see them on TV and you watch their hands, these paperweights that they have on their hands. Those are not even rings. Paperweights that these dudes have on their hands. Championship. Romo, no. Witten, no. Witten's a Hall of Fame career numbers guy.
But even guys like Dez Bryant, we know Dez because he's a Cowboy. But no, Jason Witten's making $4 million a year when he would have gotten $1 million to play football and get dinged around. And that reminded me of something I saw recently. Myself and my brother Fenton are big fans of ESPN's Dan Le Batard. Yo, Dan is the best, I think, in his sports media stuff. He is one of the most versatile. He might have a show with just some slapstick humor and they making fart jokes. But on the same show, he'll have the MLB commissioner on grilling him doing real investigative journalism. And recently I saw a clip. I missed this. This was at the NFL draft.
Post-NFL draft.
When Dan was talking about Steelers linebacker Ryan Shazier when he made an appearance at the NFL draft. Now, he suffered an injury where he lost the use of his legs for a while, but he was up there dragging his legs across that podium. Forgive me, that's just a lack of command of the English language. He was up there struggling to walk, and people celebrated it as a momentous occasion, and look at this guy, and this is triumphant. But Dan saw it as being sad, like, yo, this is what these guys got to go to make a living. And when I saw it, I thought the same. And to even hear Ryan Shazier saying, yo, man, I want to get back on that football. Get back on that football field, brother. Freaking worry about taking care of your family and your health. So, fam, I want to get your thoughts real quick on what you thought of Ryan Shazier being up there.
I'm glad you said take care of your family and your health. How has this man been taking care of his family? Playing football. So, as what you've been doing since a kid, that's all you know. You're going to go back to all you know. People don't change. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. This guy's a football player. And the sad thing about it, he didn't even get out of his rookie contract. He didn't even get his big deal yet.
He didn't even get paid yet. But that brings me to something that Dan always talks about. Seems every Monday in the football season, he is kind of morally confused about him enjoying football versus knowing how violent it is and what these guys have to go through. And he feels a bit guilty. Yo, Finn, do you feel guilty consuming football, watching football, gambling on football?
I'm the emperor. Are you not entertained? This is what it's about. I'm sorry. I choose to make a living behind my desk, typing up subpoenas, serving subpoenas. You know what I mean? Being an arbitrator for these big companies and insurance companies. That's what I choose to do. If I wanted to get my head knocked around, I had the opportunity to go play football. I did not. So, you know, that's what this man chose to do. He chose to make a living. He was successful, and he is still being successful at earning an income as a football player. Right now, he's post-football. I wouldn't come back if I was him, me personally. That, like, not being able to get up and walk, that's happened to me before at night. You ever had, like, sleeping, and you try to wake up, and you can't move?
Right.
Imagine that's real. Like, I know at some point I was going to shake that. I was going to get up, go use the bathroom, go back to sleep. The man couldn't get off the football field unassisted. That's a scary feeling.
I don't feel guilty watching football. And that's kind of been the story recently, especially when they come out with these concussion studies and they talk about how bad football is for people. Granted, I understand that. But if you're not offering another outlet for these guys, then, I mean, that's just the dirty underbelly of America, right? You got to understand that these guys, some of them are escaping more violent places than the gridiron. You know, these guys would never be able to experience some of the triumphs, putting their kids through school, putting their wife through med school, things of that nature, creating generational wealth without this game of football. So if I was these NFL owners, if I was these sponsors, the guys who have all the money in the world and they still make these guys put on helmets and crash into each other to earn a living, I would feel guilty then. But I don't have the power. I'm not holding them from making a safer living. America's doing that.
I mean, you're a part of the problem. You're the consumer. You're watching, no? So you don't, if you want to put the blame on them, they're putting them in that position. They wouldn't be in that position if the consumer wasn't watching. When I text you on Sundays, like, you saw that play? Yeah, you watching the red zone just like me. So I don't think anybody's to blame. This is a choice that everybody's made.
America's to blame.
I can't say that. You made that decision. You could have done something else. You had a free ride in college. You could have took those 4 years, 6 years, or however long you had in college, took your degree, and did something else. You had, like you said all the time, these players who get scholarships, one and done, who want the money, want to get the bag, they could take those opportunities, talk to the alumni, talk to the fundraiser people, get in these guys in and go get a job somewhere else. Nope. You know what they chose to do? Be a professional athlete. And if you play football, that's a risk you're taking. That's an assumed risk. You like to say I'm the legal expert. That's an assumed risk.
Fenton. It's funny how you pick and choose when you want to use my words. But Fenton, again, not everybody has the mental capacity to really be successful in school. For a lot of these guys, this is their only outlet. And again, I'm not somebody that is, I'm not a gatekeeper. I'm not somebody that's holding them back from successes outside of football. These owners, Jerry Jones could build a freaking, he could help these guys come into his business otherwise. But nah, he said, only if y'all play football, then you can sit at my table and eat.
I get it, man. But who was really eating from football? You seen this story with Kirk Warner? 47-year-old Super Bowl
MVP
Kurt Warner.
What happened with him?
Somebody tried to sign this dude last season. 47 years old, haven't played since 2010 in the playoff game. Got his head bust, concussion. Bye-bye, career done.
He didn't leave because of concussion.
He had a concussion the final season, career done.
Kurt Warner should have came back a few years ago when the Cardinals were good and they were without Carson Palmer.
Should have came back then, but somebody called him last year. How is Kurt Warner getting the call and my man Cap can't get a call?
Kurt Warner is not going to cost you money. Yo, don't bring me back this conversation with Kaepernick. We can update it because Eric Reed, the safety that kneeled next to Colin Kaepernick, he filed a grievance with the NFL, also saying that there's collusion.
There's been no resolution to that. So right now, I'm just speculating. So how you calling my man Kurt Warner, but Cap don't get a call? Come on, man. NFL, you got to do better. I'm done with the NFL, man. What's going on with my Yankees? Last time I checked, my man John Collins was at. And now there's a 2-0 lead against Boston, man. Why are we not at this game, man? Boston-Yankee series right now. The nice spring day. The city is rocking.
Giancarlo Stanton sucks.
Haters gonna hate, man.
What else you got over there?
Let's talk about these Yankees. Man, yo, you saw that. What happened to Yadier Molina?
No, what happened?
Oh, my gosh. Dude got hit with a foul ball in the region where the sun don't shine.
Damn. I heard he was out, but I didn't see what reason for.
I feel sorry for him, man. No man should have to undergo that type of stress in your life, man.
Right. But yo, last week was Cinco de Mayo. Shout out to Mexico.
Whew, Playa de Carmen, I'm coming back, baby.
That was the weekend we were supposed to have that monster Triple G versus Canelo fight.
Yeah, but that Mexican beef. The Mexican beef is delicious, by the way.
Yo, I'm shocked that it didn't go on. Boxing is a dirty sport. I figured they'd find a way to put it together.
Once you got popped on that test, that's it.
But they really canceled that fight, and they had my man GGG fighting some low-budget HBO joint.
Yo, you see what happened when you go to those boxing fights, man. That man said, oh, you calling me for this fight? How much? Oh, yeah, I'm here. And he took it just like, them dudes from Argentina.
What happened?
Remember the shout out to my man Rain Man at his fight over at Brooklyn Kings Theater? a lot of dudes that was fighting there, they just came for that check, man.
Oh, man, but let's get out of here real quick. Yo, it never amazes me how the human element comes into sports, you know, jealousy, people wanting to be desired, wanting to feel wanted. And for the last couple of years, Ben Roethlisberger has flirted with retirement. Oof. So, yo, this might be my last year, you know, wanting the fan base to just tell him how much they love him, wanting the ownership to say, no, Ben, don't do it. So the Steelers responded. And they drafted a quarterback this year in the third round. How did Ben respond? Yo, I'm sticking around for the next 3 to 5 years. I don't even know why they drafted this quarterback.
He said, yo, at the third round pick, you should draft somebody that can help the organization win now. My man is super salty. Yo, get out of here, Roethlisberger. That's the biggest sucker move I've ever seen in my life. If you are a champion, if you are a baller, it don't matter who's up next. You go and you ball out and nobody can tell you nada.
That's it. It ain't even about your competition, Ben. Just go out there and focus on what's in front of you. But you got it, Finn. It was mighty lame of him to now, oh, why are you guys drafting a quarterback? Ben, you told us for 3 years you was about to retire.
Yo, that's the softest tissue paper move, man. Yo, I'm out of here, man.
Yo, Finn, you got anything else?
Oh, Ben is soft.
That's it, man. That's WBH Radio. My name is William Holly. For my man, Finn, we out.
Yep.